Thank you, Mr. Barrett. I did want to mention a couple of things. First of all, I wanted to thank Jacob for his sermonette. It sure ties in well with my sermon today, and I appreciate that. The other thing is, Mr. Holliday, as I said, is in New York, and he's going tomorrow to go to the home office. They're having a Council of Elders meeting this coming week, so please pray about that, that God's will be done and so forth. He should be home late Thursday evening. Did I hear an audible, oh no, from the audience? I think just about everybody in here realizes that we do not have enough patience. And everybody kind of ducks their head and say, boy, he's going to talk to me today because he's going to preach right at me because we don't have patience. Just about everyone knows that they do not have the patience that we should have. There was an elderly man in the Walmart parking lot that had purchased several items. The poor gentleman had one arm, his right arm, in a sling. He had injured his arm somehow or the other. And he had this little low boy trailer that didn't have sides on it. And he had purchased various things from Walmart. And he was out there in the parking lot trying to procure his items on this little trailer so they wouldn't fall off or blow off. Well, the problem was the trailer stuck out into the lanes where the traffic goes, and it was blocking the way from the traffic. There was one car that had pulled up, and then almost immediately a second car pulled in behind it, and the first car was too close to the trailer to be able to get around it, so they sat there. Well, the guy in the last car just got fuming mad. And he sat there and he waited and he waited and he just backed up in a roar, spun his tires, and went around the whole episode. And someone commented, boy, I wish I had the patience of that poor old man trying to load the trailer. And it brought to my mind, is being slow being patient? Now, this elderly gentleman couldn't help, quote-unquote, being slow. He had one arm in a sling, was trying his dead-level best to work with the other one and hurry as much as he could. But is that a sign of patience? We speak of the patience of Job. Was Job slow? Was he perhaps dim-witted? Are we to emulate Job because it took him a long time to accomplish something or to do something? The word patience does not appear in the entire Old Testament. It doesn't appear in the book of Job, and it doesn't appear anywhere in the Old Testament. What is patience? I believe that every person in this room would readily admit that we all need more patience. Reading from the New Living Translation in Job 1 and verse 1. This is from the New Living Translation. There was a man named Job who lived in the land of Uz. He was blameless, a man of complete integrity. He feared God, and he stayed away from evil. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters. He owned 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 teams of oxen, and 500 female donkeys. And he employed many servants. He was, in fact, the richest man in that entire area. Then in verse 8, then the Lord asked Satan, have you noticed my servant Job? He's the finest man in all of the earth. A man of complete integrity. He fears God and will have nothing to do with evil. Satan replied to the Lord, oh yeah. Job fears God, but he is not without good reason. You've always protected him and his home and his property from harm. You have made him prosperous in everything he does. Look how rich he is, but you take away everything he has, and he will surely curse you to your face. All right, verse 12, God says, you may test him, the Lord said unto Satan, but whatever you want, do whatever you want with everything he possesses, but don't harm him physically. So Satan left the Lord's presence, and in verse 13, one day when Job's sons and daughters were dining at the oldest brother's house, a messenger arrived at Job's house with this news. Your oxen were plowing with the donkeys feeding beside them. And when the Sabaeans raided us, they stole all the animals and they killed all the servants. And I am the only one who escaped to tell you. And in verse 16, while he was still speaking, another messenger arrived with this news. The fire of God has fallen from heaven and burned up your sheep and all of the shepherds. And I am the only one who escaped to tell you. And in verse 17, while he was still speaking, a third messenger arrived with this news. Three bands of Chaldeans, raiders, have stolen your camels and killed your servants, and I am the only one who has escaped to tell you. And while he was yet speaking, another messenger arrived with this news. Your sons and daughters were feasting in their eldest brother's home, and suddenly a powerful wind swept in from the desert and hit the house on all sides, and the house collapsed, and all of your servants are dead. And all of your children are dead. I'm sorry. I am the only one who has escaped to tell you. Job stood up, tore his robe in grief, and he shaved his head, and he fell to the ground before God. And he said in verse 21, I came naked from my mother's womb, and I will be stripped of everything when I die. The Lord gave me everything, and the Lord has taken it away. Praise the name of the Lord. And in all of this, Job did not sin by blaming God. I must notice very quickly just a few things here before we get into the sermon about patience. But first of all, you notice that righteous people do have trials and they do have tests. Secondly, while righteous people have those trials and tests, others are affected by those trials. In Job's case, his servants, his animals, and his children suffered as a result of the trials that were on Job. I think God has mercifully built inside the human mind what I call a fail-safe trigger, that when so much calamity, when so much ill, and when so much wrong happens to an individual, it's kind of like your mind can't absorb it all. I cannot even begin to fathom being in Job's shoes, and here one servant comes, and another one comes and pushes him out of the way and tells, you know, this has happened, and then yet another one comes and pushes him out of the way and says, you can't believe this took place, and while they're all standing there jabbering, another one comes in and tells them that his children are dead, and all of these things. And in all of this, Job did not blame God. Job did not sin. I think it's interesting to notice that when Satan acts, he acts speedily and he acts with vengeance. That all of this took place just wham, 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 one after another, just boom, 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 boom. That when he attacks God's people, he attacks full bore. That he unleashes everything at one time. He doesn't mess around. He did all of this to Job in basically one instant. In chapter 2, God had this to say in verse 3. And the Lord asked Satan, have you noticed my servant Job? Makes you kind of hope God doesn't bring your name up, doesn't it, when you go through all of this. But anyway, it's very interesting what God has to say here about Job. And he said, he is the finest man in all of the earth, a man of complete integrity. He fears God, and he will have nothing to do with evil. He has maintained his integrity, even though you persuaded me to harm him without cause. So here Job was an absolutely outstanding, fine individual for God to speak so highly of him. To me, it's extremely interesting here to think of it from a different perspective than we normally think of a relationship with God, that we have faith and trust and confidence in God, which truly we should and must. God had faith, trust, and confidence in Job. And Satan says, you do this, Job's going to curse you to your face. God knew better. God knew Job, and he trusted Job. And he said, no, he won't. He said, you go ahead and do whatever you want, and gave him certain parameters and boundaries. And he said, Job's not going to do that. And then Job comes back and he says, you took away his physical things, but that's just physical. You harm his body, you ruin his health, and I guarantee you he'll curse you to your face. God said, no, he won't. I know him. I trust him. I put honor in him, and I put trust in him. Satan's comments, I think, are insightful as he answers God here, and we see how we as human beings think, and Satan knows our reactions and how we operate, and that is through self-preservation, always to look out for the big eye, for the number one. In Job 2 and verse 4, Satan replied to the Lord, skin for skin. He blesses you only because you've blessed him. A man will give up everything he has to save his life. But you take away his health, and he'll surely curse you to your face. So Job then began his second set of trials and tests, this time where his body was afflicted. And in Job 2 and verse 6, all right, do with him as you please, the Lord said unto Satan, but spare his life. So Satan left the presence of God, and he struck Job with a terrible case of boils from head to foot. Now, I don't know if you've ever had a boil or not, but I remember having one when I was a child on my arm. And that thing hurt so bad, I really had no idea that boils were so painful. I remember Dad had this black tar-looking stuff that he put on there that was supposed to draw the core out of it, which it did. But I remember trying to sleep at night. And if you would touch it on the pillow or the sheet would hit it, it would wake you up. I mean, it just sent a, all of a sudden, just this horrible pain through you. Well, here was Job with boils from head to foot. Up on the top of his head, whenever the wind would blow his hair, if there was any left, he said he shaved, that it would hurt because of that movement. He couldn't sit down and be comfortable. He couldn't lie down and be comfortable. He couldn't stand up and be comfortable because they were on the bottom of his feet. He was miserable no matter what he did. And so Job was struck with a terrible case of boils from head to foot. Then Job scraped his skin with a piece of pottery as he sat among the ashes. And if I remember correctly, that one little boil that I had just absolutely stank. I would imagine they smelled Job from a block away, that they just couldn't even hardly stand to be around him. Well, his loving wife comes to the rescue and said to him, "Are you still trying to maintain your integrity? Why don't you just curse God and die?" It's always good to have somebody to encourage you and lift you up and help you, isn't it? But Job replied and said, "You talk like a godless woman. Should we accept only good things from the hand of God and never anything bad?" So in all of this, Job did nothing wrong. And now, of course, to make matters worse, his three friends show up and they sit like a bump on the knot of a log somewhere. For 7 days, apparently they didn't eat, and apparently said not one word. It says, "And no one said a word, for they saw that his suffering was too great for words." And for that matter, they did okay for those 7 days until they did decide they opened their mouth, and then they started accusing Job of sinning, and they were way off. Well, the New Testament refers to the patience of Job because he endured suffering so much, and he took all of these things patiently. Notice James 5 and verse 10. James 5 and verse 10. "For examples of patience and suffering, dear brothers and sisters, look at the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. We give great honor to those who endured under suffering. Job is an example of a man who endured patiently. From his experience, we see how the Lord's plan finally ended in good, for he is full of tenderness and mercy." And the Bible does say that God is a God of patience in Romans 15 and verse 5. And the patience of Jesus Christ. It speaks of the patient example of the prophets, but actually the only one that's listed here, the only human name that shows up, is the patience of Job. and certainly taking the time to do a job right, to make sure that it's done properly. If it does take you some time, that's certainly a form of patience, absolutely. But primarily, when the Bible speaks of patience, it almost exclusively refers to patience and trials and tests, going through problems, going through afflictions, and tests and suffering that you go through. Patiently waiting for the return of Jesus Christ while we endure what is in store for us in these next few months and next few years before Christ does come back to this earth. I want to go through a word study today. And anytime, I think anyway, you go through a word study, it's very boring. But I hope I can bring all of this together at the end where it's very exciting. Because I think the words that are used in the scriptures for patience and patient is quite revealing and perhaps brings out some things we've never thought about before and applied to our lives. So let's start with the various meanings of the word patience. The word patience is not found in the Old Testament at all. There are two Greek words, Strong's number 3114 and 3115, and they have the same meaning. It's only used five times in the scriptures. And it means to be long-spirited, that is, objectively forbearing, or subjectively patient. To bear or suffer long, to be long-suffering, to have long-suffering, to be patient and patiently endure. Another Greek word, 5281 in Strong's, means cheerful or hopeful endurance. Constancy, enduring, patient, patience, continuance, or waiting. And this particular word is used 29 times in the New Testament. Now that was patience. Now the word for patient is used 9 times. Once in the Old Testament and 8 times in the New Testament. And out of those 9 occurrences, 6 different words are used to describe patient. And all of them have a little bit different derivation and a little bit different meaning. Remember now, patience was not found in the Old Testament. Patience is only found one time, and that's in Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 8. It said, "The end of a thing is better than its beginning. The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit." Although the word patient is not found in the next verse, verse 9, I think absolutely the thought is continued through. And it says, "Do not hasten in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools." And certainly I think that controlling your temper, your anger, is a vital part of patience. Here the word for Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 8, for patient, means to be long, long-suffering, long-winged, patient, and slow to anger. Now when I read that long-winged, I kind of stopped and I thought, did I read that right? Long-winged, I've never heard that expression, never really thought about that particular expression before. What do you mean to be long-winged here? So this Hebrew word definitely, again, relates to anger, controlling your anger, being slow to anger, being slow to wrath. In Ezekiel 17 and verse 3, it talks about a great eagle, this huge, big eagle, that's long-winged, the same word is used here. Now, I'm not really sure what this term specifically means, but I think, when I think of an eagle, and especially one that is long-winged, you know, I think of great strength. I think of great power, that here's this majestic being, this eagle, that's able to fly long distances because it's got these long, powerful, strong wings out here. And he doesn't give up. He can fly. He keeps going. He doesn't stop. He doesn't rest because he's got this tremendous strength behind him, and he's able to go and fly a long distance, powerful, very long-winged, fast, powerful, and mighty. The first place that patient, the word, appears in the New Testament is in Romans, the second chapter, in verse 7. Actually picking up the thought at the end of verse 5, the righteous judgment of God, who will render to each one according to his deeds, eternal life to those who by patient continuance in doing good seek for glory, honor, and immortality. Here the scripture speaks about patient continuance. The word is Strong's 5281, and it means cheerful or hopeful endurance, not just endurance, not just sticking with it, not begrudgingly that, boy, I'm going to finish this, but there's a cheerfulness, there's an anticipation, there's an excitement, that there's this hopeful endurance, this consistency of always being consistent, enduring patience, patient continuance, or waiting. This word is translated 29 times as patience and only once as patient. In Romans, the second chapter here shows how powerfully, no matter what comes along, no matter what trial, just like we read about Job, boggles your mind. You could not even begin to fathom something like that happening to you. We just can't. You can't imagine, you know, that just wham, 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 all of these things happen, with culminating with the death of all of your children, 10 children at that. But here in Romans, the second chapter, it shows that no matter what happens, no matter what trial, no matter what heartache, no matter what, you will gain eternal life by cheerful and hopeful endurance, patient continuance, and waiting. I immediately think of Matthew, the 10th chapter, and verse 22. And you will be hated of all for my name's sake, but he who endures to the end shall be saved. There's a patient, a cheerful enduring to the end to be saved that leads to eternal life. It's not begrudgingly going to the end. It's not just barely hanging on, but it's like an excitement and anticipation, a cheerful, hopeful enduring. Another Greek word, 3114, that we talked about earlier, we've already seen that, is translated patience 5 times, and is translated patient 3 times. In 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 14, let's pick up the thought and back up a couple of verses in verse 12. And we urge you, brethren, to recognize those who labor among you, who are over you in the Lord, and admonish you, and to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake, and be at peace among yourselves. In verse 14, now we exhort you, brethren, warn those who are unruly, comfort the faint-hearted, and uphold the weak, be patient with all. See that no one renders evil for evil to anyone, but always pursue what is good, both to yourselves and for all. This passage is kind of what I feel like is a how to treat everybody passage. It's a passage of how to behave yourself, how to act among other people, and how to think about them, how to work with them, how to act with them, how to react with them, and so forth. And he kind of sums it up, and he says, no one render evil for evil to anyone, no matter what they do, no matter what they say, no matter what kind of ill or lies or whatever they do to you, but always pursue what is good for yourself and for them, that you always be patient with all. Patient with the weak, he says, patient with the unruly, comfort the faint-hearted, be patient with all. To be long-suffering, to be long-forbearing, and to be patient with all. Have we ever been short with people? Have we been long-suffering and long-forbearing with everyone we have contact with? How about when our children get on our nerves? Of course, I know none of your children ever got on your nerves. Rod's not here today, so I can't pick on him. But, you know, there was a rare occasion when he would get on my nerves, or Michelle, or Ronald, or the three of them together conniving, it seemed like, just to, you know, try that last nerve you've got, and sure enough, they'd find it, and it caused problems for you. But, you know, it's hard to be long-suffering and to take patiently when somebody is trying to do you wrong, when somebody's trying to harm you? What about somebody at work? What about people at school? What about your neighbors, your relatives, your friends? And of course, I know none of us have ever been short or lack of patience with our mates, right? Well, we were talking in the car coming over here. I think that we wind up being less patient with those we love rather than virtual total strangers. We can have compassion and tenderness upon somebody that's just an acquaintance or a total stranger, but we lose our patience when it comes to those that we love, which is difficult to understand. In Romans, the 12th chapter, in verse 12, Romans 12 and verse 12 says, "Rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulations, continuing steadfast in prayer." The Greek word here is number 5278 in Strong's. It's translated 11 times as endure, translated twice as take patiently. It's translated tarry behind or wait behind one time, abide once, and patient one time, and suffer one time, for a total of 17 times. It means to remain or to tarry behind or to remain back, to remain or abide and not to recede or flee. That's very important. God could depend on the patience of Job. He put trust and confidence in Job. He knew that Job would not be one who receded, who fled under a trial or a test. He knew that he would be one that he could depend on, that he wouldn't have to worry about, because Job was patient. It means to preserve under misfortune and trials, to hold fast one's faith in Christ. It means to endure, to bear bravely and calmly ill treatments that are given to an individual. It means to stay under or behind, to undergo and to bear trials. I kind of get the sense of this word, to stay under. It's kind of like you stay behind somebody, you know, not in the sense of you're trying to get them, but it's kind of like, I'll cover your back. I'll help you. I know you're going through a trial. I know you're going through this huge, great big test, and I want you to know that I'm here to help you. I'm here to cover your back. I'm praying for you. I care for you, and I will patiently watch and care with you. So it goes beyond just our patience, but that we extend it as well to others. It means to have fortitude to endure and suffer patiently. In 2 Thessalonians, the 3rd chapter, I am in the right place, aren't I? Let's see. Here we go. Yeah. 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 5 says, "Now may the Lord direct your hearts unto the love of God and unto the patience of Christ." The King James Version actually says, "unto the patient waiting for Christ," which I actually think gets more of the proper connotation rather than the New King James Version here. That direct your hearts unto the love of God and unto the patience of Christ, which is wonderful. But it's talking more about that we have the patience to wait for Christ, that we're here waiting for Christ to return to this earth. The Greek word 5281 here means patience, translated 29 times. It means enduring once, patient continuance once, and patient waiting one time, or a total of 32 times. Steadfastness, consistency, endurance is what this word means. In the New Testament, it says the characteristics of a man who has not swerved from his deliberate purpose and his loyalty to faith and piety by even the greatest trial and suffering. That, in other words, no matter what comes along, this individual doesn't change. He remains steadfast. He remains pure. He remains true. He remains steady. He just keeps going. It means patiently and steadfastly. A patient, steady waiting for, an anticipation. A patient enduring, a sustaining, a perseverance. It means cheerful or hopeful endurance, as I mentioned earlier. A consistent and continuing in waiting. It's like looking forward to something, anticipating something, being excited about something, anticipating and waiting for the return of Jesus Christ. Now think about our lives as Christians. Are we truly excited about the return of Christ? Do we just get thrilled about the trials and the tests and the problems that we go through today because we know as a result of what we go through, we're going to be blessed, that we're going to wind up being born into the very family of God, being married to Jesus Christ as our husband? Do we get excited about those things, or do we get bogged down in the mud because of the trials and the tests and the problems that we have? One of Satan's greatest tools is discouragement. He loves to discourage God's people. But you see, when we have this patience that is talking about here, there's an excitement. There's an anticipation. There's a joyful looking forward to the future, not a discouragement at all. In 1 Timothy, the third chapter in verse 3, 1 Timothy 3 and verse 3, this is a faithful saying: if a man desires a position of a bishop, or as we say, a minister today, he desires a good work. He said there's nothing wrong with that as long as it's not out of vanity and somebody seeking authority or something like this. Matter of fact, he goes on to talk about here's just the opposite. A bishop must be blameless and the husband of one wife, temperate or self-controlled, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome or covetous. In the King James Version here in verse 3, it says, not given to wine, no striker, not greedy, a filthy lucre, but patient, not a brawler, and not covetous. This word is Strong's number 1933, translated gentle 3 times, patient 1 time, and moderation 1 time, or is used a total of 5 times in the New Testament. It means seemingly or suitable, equitable, fair, mild, and gentle. It means appropriate by implication, mild and gentle, moderation and patient. So someone that is a bishop must be suitable. They must be appropriate. They must be mild and patient. And for that matter, I wonder how many times we have tried the patience of the ministry. You just wonder, you know, about individuals. But anyway, it says that a minister has to be patient with people, that they can't be the lord over people, but they have to be patient and gentle and merciful in how they deal with individuals. Notice 2 Timothy, the 2nd chapter, and again, talking about people that hold an office in God's church, but we're all servants of God for that matter. Notice 2 Timothy 2 and verse 24. A servant of the Lord must not quarrel, but be gentle to all, able to teach, patient. This is Strong's number 420. It's translated patient 1 time, and this is the only place it's used. This is the only place where this particular word appears in the entire Bible. It means patient of ills and wrongs, to be forbearing. It means enduring of ills and wrongs, forbearing and patient. We've seen several definitions, and I want to now kind of wrap this together, hopefully in a neat little package, and see what we come up with. I know this is boring going through all these words, and you get it all mixed up in this and that. But we've seen that patience and being patient means that we're to be cheerful in trials, that we're to be long-suffering, that we're to have a cheerful and a hopeful endurance. It is an enduring, a waiting, to wait on the Lord. It means to bear and to suffer long. It means to be slow to anger and slow to wrath. It means to bear and to suffer long. It means self-control over your temper and emotions and attitude. It means self-control, and patience regards how you act and react and interact with others. Are we at the same place here? I messed you up. Okay, good. It affects the way that you look at others, how you treat others, and how you act with others. It means to tarry behind, to stay under, to carry a burden or be behind. It means to take suffering patiently. It means to have consistency, not being hot 1 minute, cold the next, hot 1 second, and turned off completely the next. It is a patient continuance of not giving up, of not quitting, of not getting discouraged, but continuing. It is one who has not swerved from his deliberate purpose and his loyalty to faith and piety, even in the greatest trial and test that you face. You know, I think about Job and what he went through, and I think about each and every one of us. There's times in our lives when we don't understand, when things happen to us that we can't come up with an explanation for. That, you know, when you're holding a child dead in your arms, when your mate dies lying beside you, when you have a loved one that's killed in an accident, when the doctor tells you you've got cancer, it's hard for us many times to say, well, I know that's God's will. And God, your will be done, not mine. And it's hard for us to correlate with all of that with Romans, the 8th chapter. And that all things work together for the good of those who love God. And we say, my wife died, how could that be good? I don't think that's good. I think that's bad. It's hard for me to, quote, rejoice in that. And to say, God, I know your will was done. And we face things in our life many times we don't have answers for, and things that we struggle with and that we don't fully understand. And that's where patience comes in. It says we are to have a patient enduring, a sustaining, a perseverance. It means to be gentle. It means to be mild and kind, to be fair, to be equitable, to be a suitable person, an appropriate person in God's eyes and in the eyes of other people. It means to practice moderation. It means to enduring ills and wrongs, just like Christ did. That they spat upon him, they butchered him virtually, they beat him to just virtually an inch of his life, and then they crucified him and did take his life, and his response was, Father, forgive them, for they don't even know what they're doing. And he asked that God would have mercy on them. When somebody does you wrong, where is mercy? When somebody does you wrong and you suffer ills and people talk about you and tell lies at work or your neighbor, you're having problems with them or whatever, do we act like Jesus Christ? Do we exemplify that perfect patience that he had? Patience also carries a strong sense of enduring, of remaining faithful unto the end. Not wavering, not going to the left, but keep going in that straight line with those long wings and continuing the flight as we remain faithful to the end. It means also to be forbearing and patient, to carry things, our burdens, and help carry other people's burdens. This thing about patience is truly a big, big deal. It actually, as I'm going to show you in just a moment, means to be whole and perfect, as we are about to see. So this patient thing is a powerful, powerful thing. It is very, very powerful stuff that God has given us. In James, the first chapter, and the first four verses, verse 2 through 4, James 1 and verse 2. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. Now, if you don't understand the patience of God, you would think that James was an absolute idiot. I mean, he says, brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. Now, that's downright plumb weird that you have all these woes, you have all these problems, you have all these worries, you have these sicknesses, you have these cancers, you have these deaths, and all of these things that life throws at you that you have to handle. And he says, you count it all joy when you face these various things, knowing that the testing of your faith does what? Produces patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. You want to be perfect? You want to be complete and absolutely pleasing in God's sight? He gives you the key, patience. You mean a person with patience can count it all joy when you go through trials and tests? When you're holding that baby in your arms and it's burning up with fever and you're afraid it's going to draw its last breath, and you're able to, quote, count it with joy? When you're going through the trials, the traumas, the test of life, when you're being persecuted, when you're being abused, when you're being taken advantage of, when you're being beaten, when you're being robbed, when you're being mistreated, and you have all these ills thrown at you, are we able to do what the Apostle James said and count it all joy, and let patience have her perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing? This patience is powerful, powerful, mighty stuff that God talks about. In James, the 5th chapter, in verse 7. James 5 and verse 7. This passage to me, in closing here, sort of sums up the meaning of patience and of being patient. Patient or patience are mentioned 5 times in these few short scriptures here from verse 7 through verse 11. Therefore, be patient, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, waiting patiently, second time, for it until it receives the early and latter rain. You also be patient and establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Do not grumble against one another, brethren, lest you be condemned. And behold, the judge is standing at the door. Then in verse 10, my brethren, take the prophets and who spoke in the name of the Lord as an example of suffering and patience. Indeed, we count them blessed who endure. You have heard of the perseverance, the King James translates it as patience for the 5th time here in these few verses, the patience of Job, and have seen the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful. And aren't we thankful, brethren, that God truly is compassionate and merciful? Chapter 15 and verse 5 says that God is a God of patience. Are we thankful for that? Are we thankful for the compassion, the mercy, the tenderness, the patience that God has been with you? Do you show and reflect that same patience to other people? You know, I've often thought, I just cannot believe God's patience with me personally. Now, maybe you haven't been the problem that I have been to God. But I've often so thought, I thought, well, God, you know, if you would decide that this just didn't work. I mean, you know, look at these human beings down here. Look at the things we do. You know, this past week, this young man down in Florida, down in Tampa, Florida, was going to blow up his school. And boy, he was excited. He thought, boy, this is wonderful. I'm going to make Columbine look like it was child's play. We're going to have so many dead this coming week when school was supposed to start. And things go on in this world, it's just downright strange and weird. And you'd think, well, God would just say, I'm sick and tired of this whole nonsense. All of these people's sins, all of these people's weaknesses, and just, you know, blot out the world and that'd be it. So we're thankful that God truly is a God of patience, that he has patience upon us. And I hope as a result that we too, brethren, can have patience with everyone else, that we can truly apply the various meanings that God shows what patience is. Because I believe that patience is faith and love combined, put into absolute practice and application in our lives.